You are listening to the Business Society podcast, formerly known as Think Like a CFO. The Business Society is a podcast for entrepreneurs and business owners, where we talk all about what it means to be an entrepreneur and manage the money in your business and personal life. I'm your host, Melissa Houston, and I am a CPA with over 20 years of experience working with entrepreneurs just like you. And I am here to share my knowledge and love of all things business. Check out my blog at thebusinesssociety.co and make sure you check out my articles at Forbes.com. Tara Stiles, named Yoga Rebel by the New York Times, has inspired millions around the world with her relatable approaches to yoga, meditation, exercise, awareness, nutrition, and everyday well-being. As the founder and owner of Strala Yoga, she has authored numerous wellness books, many of which are bestsellers, including Clean Mind, Clean Body, a 28-day plan for physical, mental, and spiritual self-care. Hi, Tara Stiles. I'm so happy to welcome you to the show today. How are you?
Doing really well. Thanks so much. I'm really excited to speak with you too.
You know, I'm actually curious, where are you calling from? Is it west by any chance?
We're actually in Southern Illinois right now. We were in New York City for so many years and all my family's out here. So actually about a month ago, we got a house out here and just decided to spend a little time closer to everybody, kind of, you know, doing what we can with the situation that we're all in the world, for sure.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy situation. But before we get going, I was hoping maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your business.
Sure. Well, I guess, you know, without saying, when I was 3 years old and selling blow pops out of my locker in a garden, that kind of a thing. But I feel like that's, you know, still how I feel. I always love the idea of doing something with business and this energy of serving people, helping people, communicating and creating some kind of energy around that. So I think that's always been a big part of just who I am, my kind of, you know, whatever makes me up. So I thought I would dance. I thought that would be my career for my, you know, 20s. Then I would stop and figure out something else to do, maybe in media or work for a magazine or kind of something interesting and totally different. But I got interested in yoga and my dance conservatory. And it kind of pulled me in a completely different direction without my permission, really, to be honest. So I thought, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And my second thought was, why don't all my friends do this? And why don't kind of people that I was meeting that don't already do yoga, why don't they do it? So I was getting more curious about misconceptions of yoga and the realities of those misconceptions and thinking how, well, there's a huge opportunity to not just say, yay, yoga, everybody should do it, but teach it in a way and change it in a way and talk about it in a way where it's more about feeling better instead of about being good at yoga and becoming some kind of yoga person. So I just started sharing it with friends and family and people that I was doing other projects with. And, you know, it just turned out that I was talking about it and sharing it kind of all of the time. And, you know, I think a lot of folks have that similar story where something that I never planned to be my career and business and whole life just ended up completely taking over. So that's my kind of origin story.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So how does like something that is of interest and you're talking about with your friends and such, how does it evolve into the business that you've built today? Because it's pretty incredible.
Oh my gosh. Well, I think I still feel like I want to share this. And I feel like there's, I mean, not to be, you know, borderline, there's an injustice about it, but I kind of felt like, oh, it doesn't need to be like this. And it can be like this. And that kind of feeling with yoga. So, you know, I kind of got started right around the same time that the internet got started. So blogging before, you know, social media was a thing. So I started a blog and I started a small yoga studio, and a gal that came there was writing for Huffington Post. And she invited me to write a blog for the health section, which at the time she said was very boring. You know, health wasn't cool yet at all. This was 2007, 2008. Okay. So I would make a video, post it on YouTube, and there was no content on YouTube in that way. There was the cat videos and things like that, but kind of instructional how-to content wasn't quite there. So I started making yoga videos that were geared to be fun. You know, yoga you can do if your partner breaks up with you, and yoga you can do for back pain or a hangover or a headache or something like that. So that was my kind of way in. And I was really trying to change the yoga to be about moving well in your body and, you know, taking everything I learned from dance and also yoga, but making it less rigid and less controlling. So I didn't know that anybody would really like that, but it turned out, you know, people did. And I didn't really know what it meant to have a lot of views on YouTube or have a lot of people read your blog, but it just kept leading to more opportunities. More people would come to the studio. We got to start to open more studios and thinking, how far can I take this and what all can I do that makes sense, that still fits the vision? You know, a lot of things just started to become more obvious, like partner studios and teacher trainings to help other yoga teachers teach in a way that helps their students feel better and, you know, helps them feel better as a yoga teacher and less pretentious or rigid or copying what their teacher did in this way. So really a lot of time spent decoding what I was already doing and figuring out the method of that from Tai Chi and Shiatsu and all of these East Asian healing arts that I was interested in, but really having the laboratory to figure out what was going on and how to kind of unpack that a little bit and present it and show it and share it and all the different variations that are possible, especially now with apps and video and studios and trainings. And we've done clothing lines and, you know, kind of so many different things to do and play with. But really the whole feeling of it is always about helping people feel better. And that's always been fun and kind of kept my energy going for it for sure.
So when you were building your business, like you opened studios, how many studios did you have going and do you still have them?
Yeah, so I started with this with one small studio in New York, one space just for myself, and other teachers started coming and saying, well, I want to kind of lead in this way. So we were figuring how to, you know, evolve in one particular space, and we needed a bigger space and a bigger space. So eventually, you know, other people started calling our New York space headquarters or whatever. And I'm thinking, headquarters of what? You know, it's just this. And I think because New York is New York, people come in from everywhere. And so it felt very global. And then what started to happen was other instructors that were doing our training programs wanted to open studios. And I was thinking, well, I don't want it to be a heavy franchise. And I don't want to sort of spend all my time managing people and ordering light bulbs and figuring out the look of every place. We figured out an easy way, well, not easy, but easier way to license and be a partner studio, partner program. So that's been really fun. So we have a bunch of partner studios all around the world, which is great for an individual person who is just starting out. So they're not burdened by, you know, some sort of idea about my idea of what Strala should be. And they can have their own sign and it's a co-branded thing. And they can print their own t-shirts and have their own community. And there's still this kind of bigger community feeling of that. So I just, as you do, you call your lawyers and say, how can we make this possible? And can I give them the name if they want the name? And how can they be protected and from the person next door and all of these things? So I think the hardest part is really just global licensing and figuring all of the things out that you need to do with that.
But it's fun too. Well, I mean, there's always challenges as an entrepreneur. I mean, did you have any specific, maybe hard challenges that it took a little bit of effort, or you have some lessons to pass on to others about how you face challenges while you're building your business to share with any listeners?
Sure. Well, I think for me, what started to happen was momentum started, I think for a lot of folks, kind of really fast. Not at the beginning, but when it happened, it was sort of one thing and then the next thing and the next thing. And all these opportunities, you know, started coming really quickly. The New York Times did an article and I thought it was going to be a little couple paragraphs in the back of the paper. And the journalist had told me that. And then she called me the night before and she said, we're giving you the cover of the Metro section. And I'm thinking,
no.
I know. Wait, you know.
So it was amazing.
It was amazing. And it was the biggest gift ever. You know, she's like an angel in my life still. I thank her for that, you know, but at the same time, I wasn't quite ready. I don't think you're ever quite ready for all of those opportunities that then come out. So I think for me, my lesson in that was slowing down a little bit and noticing where I wanted to go and how to get there better. And if I was going to fly to Europe to do something, stay an extra day instead of fly the next place to do something else, and kind of managing my own time, not just to, you know, for self-care and all of that, but just to make better opportunities with the people that were there. I could go out to dinner instead of saying, oh, let's talk on a call. I'm on the way to the airport. Busy, busy, busy. That kind of a thing. And now there's a bit more space and time to do all of that. But one thing that I'm happy that I didn't run straight into was during that momentum, a few different VC firms came up and very flatteringly brought me into their boardrooms. And I got to see all the fancy things that they thought that they could do for Strala and for me. And I kind of saw myself going to work at these places that didn't exist yet, the big corporate headquarters, and seeing myself also kind of get fired from my own company. And then thinking, well, do I actually need funding? And what would that money do? And are the things that I want to do possible with the amount of money that we're making? And can we just go there on our own and, you know, have complete control? And then if someday I want to do something else, maybe we give it away or sell it or join up with a company in some other way. So I'm really kind of happy that I didn't run straight into those kind of glamorous opportunities, because for me, you know, we're not making a product that needs to have a lot of factory and people and stuff to actually do. And our product is invisible. It's yoga, it's people, it's time, it's energy. So I have a lot of friends that found companies and they need the money to do all of these things, but we had the funding within ourselves to do anything we needed to do from how we were functioning. So I know that's maybe an unpopular thing in business, because a lot of times people feel like, oh, I'm going to go get the funding and tell somebody about my big idea and then I do it. And I feel like I did it completely the opposite way. Maybe in another 10 years that'll happen, but I'll feel very confident in exactly what it is and exactly what I want to use that money for and exactly how we'll change the world and all of that then, because now we can do it on our own now, which has been really fun.
Well, yeah, and you get to do it on your own terms, which a lot of people don't realize. When you get venture capital backing, that you're giving a portion of the control away. And like you said, you're basically at the mercy of the people who are financing your dream. And I really love that you brought that up, because I really like to remind listeners that if you are in a position where you don't need to get that venture capital, you may really want to consider passing on it, because, I mean, like you said, it can be very glamorous and they can pull you into their world and show you all the great, wonderful things that they can do for you and stuff, but you're going to have to do things on their terms. And sometimes that, well, quite often actually what happens is their ideas clash with the business owner ideas. And then there's friction. And, you know, these deals can turn out to be very detrimental to the original business owner. So I'm really, really happy that you brought that up. Now, are there any other types of lessons like that you had to learn? Like maybe during the pandemic, did your partners struggle with their studios? And what happened around that?
Yeah, well, yes and no, but I think it was so cool to see everybody kind of support each other and know that maybe because we didn't try to get shiny and glossy, that our community is a real community in a way. Like there's real people. We have, you know, private Facebook groups and WhatsApp chats and all of these ways that not everybody talks to everybody, but everybody kind of knows that the door is open. So for so many folks, I mean, we have this, you know, we had this kind of corny, not an official tagline, but we would always say online is great, in person is magic, when we'd get together in person. And then we'd go back to the digital and, oh, I'm going home from Berlin, I'll see you in 6 months or whatever, you know, WhatsApp you on the way home. So we always kind of had that inside feeling about going online and also appreciating online for that connection. So I think most of the folks that were leading yoga in our community already felt comfortable to be online and had a good relationship with it. It wasn't like, oh, I don't want to go online because I'm not going to be the most popular person on the internet. It was sort of like, no, we go online to connect with the people that we're already connected to in person. And if anybody else, if you're kind of on an open social platform, wants to walk by and see your video, then that's fine. But I think we've had so much community support and conversations around really presenting ourselves online in a healthy way for ourselves, especially as things progress just online in general and, you know, all of the strange pressures of that. When Instagram started, people started to call themselves their name and then Strala after it, just to kind of identify with each other. And, you know, I'd say, I'm not here to tell you what to do or what not to do, but I want to know who you are. Obviously, you guide Strala classes and you're part of this community. So you know, we all kind of support each other. It would seem kind of anti-brand, but it's really been, I think, one of the strongest ways we've stayed healthy. You know, if somebody wants to lead Strala classes, but also, you know, dive into nutrition or go back to school and get a social work education, there's no like, oh, you should only be doing this. You know, it's much more of a supportive community. So of course there was folks that only taught in person and then wanted to try to share online. But in our Facebook groups, everybody kind of rallied in to say, okay, you can do this. Here's the camera to get, here's the ring light to get, and here's this and here's that, and here's how to save money to do it. And, you know, I am really proud that people came together to support and kind of uplift. And really a lot of people feel more comfortable now in our community to be kind of doing this hybrid thing and realizing that online can just be real people in their homes, not the scary thing of the vast, somebody's going to see me that I don't know. You know,
Yeah. And, you know, as you're speaking, the real strong message I'm getting from you is that community is very important to you. I absolutely love that.
For me, it's, I mean, I'm from a small town. I think you probably are like this too, you know, kind of the person that's friends with everybody, but not really in any of the groups kind of a thing. Yeah.
It's so true. I actually am. And,
yeah. After high school, you get to go out and meet the world in a way. And yeah. I enjoy everybody I grew up with, but I was also so excited to meet anybody different from me and anybody with a different experience or a different background. And also with yoga, it's such an easy expression. We all want to feel better. So I'm just so grateful I can go to Malaysia and lead a yoga class to a group of women who have completely different life, totally different backgrounds. And we can just connect about feeling better. And then it's like you don't need to be kind of fake BFFs, but you're really having a nice connection. And to me, that's just, you know, my whole goal in life, I guess, is to have that connection with people and not feel like strangers are scary or, you know, we all need to be in fights with each other all the time, especially now, I guess, but always really.
Yeah, no, I love that. I absolutely love that. Now, you also wrote a book and it's called Clean Mind, Clean Body, a 28-day plan for physical, mental, and spiritual self-care. Now, I have a copy of it and I absolutely love it. Would you like to share a little bit about that book with the listeners?
Sure. Yeah, this book was all about kind of seeing the trends in wellness become so fast and so big and wild. And maybe a little bit, now that we're talking about this, my own kind of observation about VC things kind of coming in, making everything shiny, and then people go in and get the shiny thing and then leave and then not feel better. You know, and we all kind of experience all sides of that, I think. So just seeing how this idea of fast wellness was starting to take over. So a little bit of observation about that, and also some invitation to do all of these things that are maybe still intimidating, like yoga and meditation and shiatsu and tai chi, but also take all of these Eastern arts that seem so big and realize that you can change the way you pick up your groceries and feel better instead of thinking, oh, I got to pick up the groceries and all of these things. Or I can sit here and have a nice conversation and still be with my breath and know that when I do that, it's going to feel good for me. And it's also going to feel good for you and your listeners, instead of thinking, oh, I need to tell you all these things to share about, you know, my ideas. And then it doesn't feel good for me and it doesn't feel good for anybody else. So really all the things that I've benefited from the healing arts and sharing them and kind of taking the form vocabulary of yoga out of it, because at the end of the day, you know, we can do all of these things without getting down on a yoga mat, but we kind of get addicted to that self-care, precious time. And then it's kind of an all or nothing. So I wanted to kind of just open that up a bit.
Yeah. And I love how you touched on how it's all or nothing. I mean, I know for me personally, I had my first child in 2002. And before, I was in much better shape, much healthier, and I loved doing yoga. I absolutely loved it. So then the first baby came, second baby came, life got in the way. We're looking at, you know, 18 years later, and I'm like totally, especially in the last year with the pandemic, not a lot of movement, you know, feeling very stiff and tight in the muscles. And I'm like, okay, I know I need to do this and I don't know how to start again. Like, what kind of advice do you give to people like that?
Oh gosh. Well, I think that's You're my favorite person to hang out with because yoga people are like, they know what to do. I don't need to help anybody that's already doing yoga. But, you know, just simply softening a little bit and noticing your breath moving through yourself. And, you know, I think from there, you notice, oh, I feel myself now. And then I realize I want to feel better. So I know what to do. It's kind of like Michael Pollan says, we know that the foods we should be eating, but we're not because, you know, stress and everything else. And same thing with yoga. It's kind of softening yourself a little bit, rolling around. And I think it's remembering that yoga can feel like you. It doesn't need to be about you doing that thing that you did 18 years ago in yoga. It can be about you getting on the ground right now, moving around a little bit, doing the movements, you know, like it's a dance, like a movement vocabulary, and making whatever you do the best thing in the world exactly for you right now. And I think so many folks feel like, if I can't follow the video, if I can't do that old version of me, then I'm just going to quit. Or, you know, I remember when I could do this and now I can't. So it just feels exhausting. I mean, I can't operate like that. Nobody can. You know, you have to go with the version of you that's here right now. And I mean, that's what all the wise people say anyway, you know, here now. But really,
well, it sounds to me like you're pretty wise too. So
I don't know. A lot of the neuroses come from trying to be older versions of ourselves. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe especially women too. It's like, oh, I had all these things happen and I used to be so much better. And now so much yeah. time has gone by, you know? So
well, yeah, it's like, there's no way I'm going to show up in a yoga class because, you know, I'd be right at the beginner stage, maybe even worse than a beginner versus, you know, 90% of the students there who are like advanced. So it's the comparison thing too, which really is not a good thing to do. I know that.
Yeah, not a good thing. I think just getting down on the ground and, you know yoga already. So it's just getting down on the ground, taking a few breaths and seeing what happens. And then, you know, you get hooked on that just as much as hooked on the negativity and all of those things too. But I think that's the hardest part is just beginning. And once you begin, you feel better, you know?
So yeah. Yeah. It's so true. You never regret doing it. You regret not doing it. So when you were writing the book, did you enjoy the process?
Yeah, I think, you know, we were talking earlier, that's such a big part of me as well, is thinking through things, reading about things, researching about things, observing myself and the world and getting it out in some way. So for me, that's something I really enjoy doing. So I have, like everybody, many different parts of myself. And I think without exercising that part in some way, whether it's a published book or just, you know, reading and writing on my own, then I wouldn't feel like a whole me. So I'm happy to do that.
Well, was this your first book?
Eighth, I think.
Your eighth book. Wow. You've written a lot of books.
I don't know. Well, you know, most of them have been about yoga, you know, trying to say, slow down in different ways, you know, and then I got to travel a lot. So I was making friends with people who were showing me their healthy recipes. After they did yoga, they wanted to eat better. So my friends in Europe and Asia and South America were showing me the local foods that they had. So I made some cookbooks with everybody else's recipes and how to make healthy things, because I wanted to know how to make healthy things that were simple, didn't take a lot of time, and still tasted good.
Yeah.
So I was sick of all these, you know, all of these messages that you had to get 85 ingredients to make one thing.
It's so true. It's so true. I mean, that's the reason why I love those dinner packages now. Where,
oh yeah, that's so good.
Yeah, exactly. It makes life so easy and you don't have to spend a fortune getting all the little recipe things that you never would use again.
Right. Yeah, for sure. All these different flours and different
spices and different, all sorts of stuff. So if there was a lesson that you really wanted entrepreneurs and business owners to take away from you today, what do you think that would be?
Oh gosh, I think slowing down and noticing how you feel, you know, especially for entrepreneurs that I just had the privilege of knowing, you know, we kind of value how busy we are and our sort of stress is the sign of success. And, you know, I'm going a mile a minute. Isn't that great? I'm doing all these things and isn't it awesome? And the principles, what I've learned from yoga and Tai Chi, if you move slowly, you can get more done because you're not making mistakes.
Yeah, it's so true.
And you see more, you actually see more of a peripheral vision, you see more of a longer vision. And that's what entrepreneurs want anyway, to be able to have that longer view and also feel good every single step of the way while you get to this big goal. You know, if you feel like crap now and move fast and break things, all of that, you may get that goal, but when you get it, you may not even enjoy it. So it's sort of like that may not even satisfy you. So the goal is important, but being satisfied and feeling complete and also having a good impact. You know, if you move too fast, you can't see hardly anything to make a positive impact. And especially now we're all trying to learn more, be more aware, you know, do the best that we can. And we can't do that if we're not paying attention to ourselves along the way.
Yeah, not being healthy. Yeah, for sure. I completely agree with that. And I'm definitely taking all your advice into account from this book, which is fantastic. I put it on my office table so I can see it all the time and be reminded of it and say, okay, the time is now.
You know what to do. Yeah, just get down and breathe. And
yeah, just a little bit every day, right? And exactly. Just keeps increasing. So that's good advice for listeners out there who may be in the same boat as me. I'm sure I'm not alone in that group of people. Now, I'm sure you're going to have listeners who want to purchase your book or, you know, check out your website or follow you on Instagram. Where can people find you?
Sure. TaraStyles.com has books and blog posts and things like that. Astralayoga.com has everything about Astrala, the partner studios. You can also practice with the Astrala Yoga app. We have hundreds of hours, decades of videos there, and also live classes 6 days a week. I love that community, as you know, drew out of me as well. But for me, the internet, especially now, the ability to go live and be with people for me feels quite new still. You know, it used to be, I remember 10 years ago in the studio, I would think, oh, it'd be so cool if we could have, you know, a live class, but the only things live were the news or a boxing match, and you'd need like a big truck outside, and you couldn't just put up your webcam. And
it's so true. Things are so different now.
It's so different now. And I think for us, you know, taking advantage of that on an app is so valuable for the people practicing to be in a community as well. It's valuable for me. Of course, you can go anytime and rewatch a live class or any video you like. But I think even just subconsciously knowing, okay, there's a class every day, I can log on if I want to, just like walking to a studio. For me, it's the same, whether it's online or in person. You know, we're all together trying to do our best and feel better.
Yes, I love that. And I'm definitely going to check out your app. I think that's exactly what I need. Well, I just want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure talking to you and learning about your business and how you've managed to grow it. It's pretty fantastic. So thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks for having me. We'll do some yoga together soon.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to that. Thanks for listening to the Business Society Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, leave us a review. Your ratings and reviews help more people like you find our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and share this podcast with someone you think would love it. Until next time, I'm Melissa Houston. And never forget, nobody will ever care about your money as much as you do. So never give your financial power away.